Don't wanna see my great Cortina no more. Don't wanna see my great Cortina no more. Cortina no more.
Lathcart Records' handmade polycarbonate discs have been a fixture of independent record labels for years and are still being produced, but as ever in short runs, including this one, Grey Cortina by Bungalow, produced by one of the best known and most prolific NZ lathcutters, Peter King. The record covers are also handmade, and it's this cover art that got Luke Wood, senior lecturer in graphic design at the University of Canterbury's Ilam School of Art, totally hooked. Intrigued enough to scour the country to get examples of lathe cut albums for an exhibition that's about to open in Auckland before heading to Wellington. You can see a gallery of images on the Standing Room Only webpage. Well, I spoke to Luke and to James Meharry, musician, DJ, and one of the handful of people still producing limited edition lathe cut records in New Zealand. First, though, Luke offers a handy definition.
So a lathe cut record is different to the kind of record you'd normally see in a record store in that it's cut individually. It's almost like in a reverse process of what your record player does. It's essentially dragging a needle across the surface of a disc, which is made of usually some kind of form of plastic or vinyl, and that cuts the sound into it. So they're done one at a time, in real time. So we're also done in usually really small numbers, as opposed to commercial record pressing, which is a stamping process. But actually, James probably knows more about this than I do, because he's actually a cutter.
You actually did pretty well at explaining
that.
You did well. Yeah, no,
I was worried about that, sitting over this side.
You can take it further, James. What got you started in lathe cutting?
I think collecting records, really. I think the records are just a really tactile, attractive, large format type of music. And as a teenager, I started collecting them, started DJing them, playing around with them. And there was a culture, from my perspective, of what's known as dub plates, which are sort of one-off lathe cuts. Over in England, the DJ culture was about taking music down to the local cutting house, getting it cut, having exclusive material on those dub plates and playing them out in the weekends at the various nightclubs and events and festivals. We didn't really have much of a dub plate cutting culture here in New Zealand, but I was following the music styles. And subsequently you become sort of fascinated and fixated on that process. And I'm kind of mechanically sort of mobile as well. I like playing around with things on my hands. And 8 years ago, I found somebody who would sell me some equipment. It was accessible in that I could go over and buy it and learn how to use it and bring it back. And there's so many little variables that go in making... It's a bit of a tightrope, really, keeping everything operational. One small part, whether it be electrical or mechanical, can go wrong, and it's quite hard sometimes, more than some other studios, to ascertain what that problem is.
We should mention too that there are like quite different cutting processes. Not all lathe cutters are the same, and so James's setup is actually quite a hi-fi, high-end one.
And Peter King, who probably King Records, everyone's really familiar with him, and a predominant amount of his work is in the exhibition, he used a steel needle to cut with, which is distinctly different from a diamond needle, that, or a faceted needle, as it's known, that I use. And most professional hi-fi recordings that you get as in a pressed form, which is a commercial format, is produced first and foremost with a diamond needle, faceted needle, which is kind of, if you imagine it, it looks like a plough. It's got multiple faces and essentially a cutting edge, which cuts into the left and the right groove of that at a very, you know, down at the microns level of 10 to 15 microns. It cuts into each side of the record groove, the left and right channel of the recording.
Luke, I'm going to get into your detective work, because you covered the country trying to track down records for your exhibition. And I know you love the music, but of course it's the design that really grabbed you about this. How did you go about sourcing these, what, more than 250 record and covers that you've got in the exhibition?
Yeah, so that was quite a long, drawn-out process. When I first sort of talked to Object Space about doing this show, I had a few records in my collection, mostly cut by Peter King and mostly made by either me or my friends. But also sort of about 15, 20 years ago, I started becoming quite friendly with a guy in Littleton called Bruce Russell, who ran a couple of record labels actually in the 90s. And he had a much bigger collection of stuff that I'd never kind of seen or heard before. So I quickly figured out via going through his stuff that there was quite a wide network of different kinds of things that Peter King had cut for different people. That was enough to kind of interest me in looking further. And actually, I started doing the research for this by going to the Alexander Turnbull Library, which I could see from where I was based in Christchurch via their database that they had over 500 lathe cut records in their collection. So I kind of went up to Wellington, stayed there for a week, but then realised that most of the records they had in their collection had been sent to them by Peter King, which meant that they had the records, but they didn't have the covers. So there was actually no cover art. But what that did was highlight to me that there were people running labels around the country throughout the 1990s and in the early 2000s. And so then I came up with the strategy that I would try and contact the people who had run these labels, and I would go essentially to the source. They're the people who have been kind enough to loan me the records for the shows. So yeah, the show's sort of based around people running labels as much as anything else, more so actually than the production of the records themselves. It's about people running labels and sort of the production of the entire package.
James, in this digital online world, Spotify world of ours, what's the demand like? Are you still busy lathe cutting those records?
Well, it seems to be that the interest is still high. In the last, I mean, I've actually reduced my output so that I could just focus on some engineering projects. But the practice, as far as I understand, is continuing to grow. There's an online blog environment called Lathe Trolls. It's a sort of a support community. It seems to be the where most people go to practice and learn and share ideas. And yeah, it seems to be that more people are developing more ways to cut records in this old format.
I think that's what's interesting to, I think, smaller, more marginal kinds of bands and musicians, is that lathe cuts, you know, you can't do many, but they're a kind of cheaper, affordable way to make a physical product, which usually exists or coexists with an online digital version via Bandcamp or something like that.
Mm. What about the sound quality, James? I'm interested. What do you reckon compared to traditional vinyl? I won't compare it with CD because it's a different thing, but what is the sound quality like?
Well, I think it varies greatly, actually. Peter King's model, as I suggested earlier, with the difference between the cutting instrument itself, the needle, his is circular, so it doesn't have a cutting edge, and therefore it's what I call lo-fi recording. My level is what you'd call more professional, hi-fi, stereo image is very clear. The quality, you know, I can control and have a good range of frequency from 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz. And then, you know, the professional ones like Neumann and Westrex, which are, you know, the predominant technologies being used overseas, they are probably another level of what I'd call sound separation. So the stereo image is wider and clearer, and you know, a lot of what you hear on records is being produced or mastered in these studios with the traditional cutting equipment.
Luke, when you went in search, you wanted early work, of course, and Peter King's been mentioned several times. He was really busy, particularly in the 80s. But what about artists these days? Are there some big names out there using lathe cutting?
I guess the show that I put together, really, the focus really is on the experimental music in New Zealand and a more kind of underground scene. I think a lot of the experimental musicians, noise bands especially, that were also coming up as a thing in the early 1980s. Bands like the Dead Sea are probably the most kind of well-known example. And different members of the Dead Sea went off and did kind of solo projects with Peter King and set up labels based on his product. But they were really the kind of people who were interested in using his product, I think liked the way it sounded. my background was playing in B-grade garage rock and roll bands.
Did you cut any albums?
Yeah. I've done a few with Peter in the past. Not albums, but singles, 7-inch singles. Mm. And we, because of the nature of the music we were into, we actually really liked the way Peter's records sounded. We were recording in very kind of intentionally lo-fi ways anyway, like quite often plugging one microphone into a Sony Walkman and recording to a cassette tape and having everything dialed up into the red. So in a sort of conventional sense, it didn't sound good anyway, but it sounded the way we wanted it to sound. And then sending it to Peter, him cutting it to vinyl, we were always really stoked with what we got back.
I see the name Aldous Harding here in the exhibition, Luke.
Yeah. The inclusion of the Aldous Harding one's sort of funny because she is, well, that record is a little bit of an anomaly because mostly, in fact, everything else in the show is pretty much experimental, lo-fi, garage rock and roll,
that sort of stuff. There's a few of mine that he's chosen from the singles collection, which is in a series format of, and I've been recording essentially every month. I record two of the top singles on RDU radio station, two single on a double A side, 7-inch. And so there's a range of artists on that, what you'd call more mainstream.
And
Aldous is obviously, she wasn't mainstream at the time that I cut that, and I cut that for Littleton Records, who came to me and asked me for 40 records.
Do you remember hearing her voice for the first time, though, and thinking, this girl, she's going to go far?
I listened to that album, obviously, a lot, because I had to sit there and listen and monitor as I cut 40 copies of her first album. And, yeah, it really grew on me, let's just say that. At first, you know, because she's got such a unique style, both sound and style, from a performance standpoint, her sound was very unique. And I wasn't surprised, let's just say that.
Well, also because Hannah was well known to us all living in Littleton.
Well, that's right. I live in Littleton, so yeah.
We were looking at the cover design, Luke, you know, what you're particularly interested in here, and because we're thinking that the lathe cutting is a certain style of cutting, that the cover art might be experimental or a little bit rough, but have you got some really beautiful covers there?
Yeah, there's quite a range of approaches, and I guess that's one of my driving interests was that as a graphic designer by trade, you know, a lot of the work that I've done or been involved in or seen is sort of restricted by the limitations of commercial reproduction. So at a certain point in time, I got really interested in this idea that when you're operating with really small runs, that actually creates all these opportunities to use interesting materials, to print in different kinds of ways. A lot of the lathe cuts in the exhibition come with really elaborate covers. Some of them come with publications and often are entirely kind of handmade, but not necessarily in a kind of crafty sense. They're still quite designed objects. And even some of the most radical ones, I think one of the kind of standout artists in the show is a guy called Witsist, who's from Whangarei, who makes these really elaborate covers with different sorts of found materials like plastics and vinyls, and kind of feels like rubbish that he's found and kind of sticks together. And the first time I saw them, I thought they were really interesting, but what was more interesting was as I went around different people's collections, I would see the same record again and again, and I was kind of really impressed at the consistency of the Witsist records, which looked like they would be one-offs, but he's clearly made them as larger kind of sets.
James, with the musicians you've worked with, do they produce their own covers? Are you solely responsible for the lathe cutting?
From RDU singles, it's been the artist's material, so we just ask for the artist to supply them artwork, and then I do a double A-side print and put together. A couple of them I've produced myself, and these are, you know, extends into what Luke was talking about around experimental sleeve production, and including some discs that I've created forms and actually cut the disc to a different shape.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So what sort of shape?
The one that's in the exhibition, there's a series of three of them, and they are in hex form, so they have sort of six sides. So I cut that out of a 12-inch, cut it down to a hex form, and then I cut it essentially a 10-inch recording on that including, you know, Hex labels and Hex imagery all over it. I mean, it's essentially a Hex by design.
What a lovely thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, they're interesting when you see them, plus the ones that I did for Luke, which I think he's included a couple of transparent ones that also include etching on them. So, and Littleton Records also has specifically something unique, which is an etching of Littleton Records logo on the face of the plate where the label would be. And then I hand wrote with a white marker the actual name of the artist, Aldis Harding, plus her title. You know, and then each into it the actual number of the disco. I was following this ideal of turning the object into more of an artwork, and that's why Luke was interested in a number of the pieces that I had, including one that I did as a live to ear cut of a local poet called Ben Brown, for a work he performed called "I Am the Married Jesus," and that involved an etching that I did on one of the discs that I used as a print surface. So I ended up doing a rolled ink print using a hand press. And then the discs themselves sit on top as etchings, and you get a really sort of surreal sort of picture of his face as an image of the concept of the work. So there's the recorded work, there's the live performance, which we recorded directly to disc at the same time he was performing it. And then I produced this one single work from it as a result.
This kind of fits in, I think, with the zines are big at the moment. You know, this return and appreciation of the handmade and the limited edition responding against the stuff that everybody has, eh?
I think there's some other things that have been really interesting that I've watched recently, which some of the audience might like to look up, is around the idea of how digital assets are connecting to real assets in a way that hasn't existed before in the context of new technologies such as blockchain. There is a business, for example, called Dada Music, which is around connecting people in a digital world to create digital works and using blockchain technology to essentially share and create ownerships. And that's it's seeming to actually now move out into the physical world, where the art world that formerly had difficulties around identification of music in a art in a physical sense, is potentially going to be able to connect it in a digital world and, I guess, protect ownership, clarify ownership, and create connections that didn't really exist before.
I remember in the 90s, as a graphic designer, there was a lot of talk about the end of print. Everyone was sort of paranoid that we all were going to have to become web designers. Mm. And I think what interestingly happened was that actually, as the internet developed, what that did was create new networks to more niche audiences, which actually meant that the print runs of more niche kind of publications actually expanded and increased. Yeah.
I think that's the same here. I think I've essentially embraced that.
We used to get lathe cuts made by Peter King, and we'd sell them on the door at a gig. Now we actually can sell them on Bandcamp, and they sell really quickly, and they go all over the world.
Luke Wood and James Meharry, and you can hear the full interview on the Standing Room Only webpage. A short run, a selection of New Zealand lathe cut records, opens on Saturday at Object Space in Auckland, and thanks to Steve Burridge for lending us his lathe cut record by Bungalow.